From the Premier League, it's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. Midweek madness means game week 17 is fast approaching. What to do with Chelsea's defence and swerving suspensions? All that and more on this week's official Fantasy Premier League podcast. Well, hello, nice to be with you on a Monday. We are, of course, back because Game Week 17 kicks off on Tuesday, the 14th of December at 6pm UK time. And joining me, Kelly Summers, this week, it is football consultant and journalist Jonathan Faduba. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Kelly. How are you doing?
I am very good, thank you. Still reeling from not a very good game week and going out of the FPL Cup, but we don't need to talk about that. Anyway, moving on, from the analyst is Duncan Alexander. Hi, Duncan.
Hello, Kelly.
Hello, and we also have a pod debut for Ted Wickham of TED Talks FPL, who finished 63rd in the world in 2019. He comes on here with quite some credentials. Ted, welcome to the podcast. How's your season been going?
Goodness me, what an introduction. Try and live up to it.
No pressure.
Season's been going okay. Yeah, started okay. We're about 45k at the moment, so fingers crossed for a fast finish. But yeah, excited to be here. Thank you for having me on.
No, we're very excited to have you here. Just a small matter of like playing it down. I've started the season all right, up in the top 50k in the world. How the rest of us can dream of that. Hopefully you'll have plenty of tips for us coming up. But before we do look back on how the rest of the panel did in game week 16, here is your recap of the main FPL headlines. A reminder, Spurs versus Brighton was postponed, so we had nine fixtures to enjoy. Ronaldo returned from the spot at Norwich. Mr. Consistent, Mo Salah, also did the same for Liverpool against Aston Villa. The most transferred in player of the game week, Bernardo Silva, won a penalty two for City to win against Wolves, whilst Chelsea won two penalties in their 3-2 win against Leeds. 15 points for Jorginho, the same number of points as well for Conor Gallagher, who scored twice for Crystal Palace against Everton. But the joint top scorers this week were the Leicester duo, Youri Tielemans and James Maddison, with 16 points each in Leicester's 4-0 win over Newcastle. With the good news comes the bad, though, and no points for Reece James. Mikel Antonio blanked again, and Diogo Jota got a single point from the bench, and Joao Cancelo picked up his fifth yellow card, meaning he is now out of game week 17. We'll talk a little bit more about him later. Jonathan, let's kick off with your game week, as you were the highest scorer on the panel with 66, but let's be honest, you did get a little bit of luck, didn't you, off your bench?
You could call it luck, I suppose, but it was clear that Smith Rowe was struggling, so I felt like if Smith Rowe played, then he would do really well. And if he wasn't fit to play, then yeah, I guess the luck is that Arteta didn't bring him on, you know, in the last like 2 minutes or something like that. That would have killed me. But then also I had another player out injured. So Conor Gallagher would have come off the bench anyway. So yeah, I was happy with that. The gamble I took this week was Callum Wilson, which failed spectacularly. I thought he might bag against Leicester because they got quite a poor XG against Leicester. Didn't happen. It was a comfortable 4-0 win there. So, yeah, but Conor Gallagher saved me. I was really happy with Rudiger as well because he's had three consecutive game weeks where his maximum points were two. And I was considering it because I have three Chelsea assets in defence. I was considering getting rid of Rudiger, but I'm glad I kept faith in him and he's returned 9 points. So all in all, I'm pretty happy with that week gone by, yeah.
Yeah, the Chelsea defence are going to feature very shortly as well because you're not the only manager that's wondering just what to do with Thomas Tuchel's backline. Duncan, for you, you only had 10 men out this week, a problem that many managers had. You were without a goalkeeper because Sanchez didn't play, but you did have some high scorers in your team, finishing on 59.
Yeah, I've got both Brighton keepers, which doesn't work if their game gets postponed. But yeah, I mean, I've been basically trying to overhaul my midfield the last few weeks. So I've brought in Bernardo, so I've been benefiting there. Brought in James Maddison, so that was good.
Nice.
This week's move was to bring in Greenwood because I figured he looked really good in the Champions League and I think he needs a run next to Ronaldo in the new formation that United are playing under Ralph Rangnick. And I think if he does, I think he's really going to start banging in some goals. So although he only got a point this weekend, I think that's going to probably pay dividends in the next few weeks. So yeah, it was a reasonable weekend. I mean, apart from Antonio, which I think it's funny, isn't it? I think normally most people would have got rid of Antonio by now, but I think because his price is pretty good and because he does go on these little runs, I think everyone's a little bit scared that as soon as you sell him, he's just going to start banging in the goals again.
Yeah, that's something Sam Bonfield said on the pod the other week as well. We've also been waiting for this run of fixtures for West Ham. It feels a bit foolish to sell him with their run of green fixtures they've got coming up. Ted, let's look at your game week then. No such bench luck for you, but a very strong 64 points.
Yes, it wasn't too bad. Two free transfers this week. So I moved out Tony and Son for Ronaldo and Bowen, and Ronaldo duly dispatched his penalty to yield 9 points for my team. So happy with that for sure. But yeah, frustration on the bench for Jota, who I started in my team. He was benched against Aston Villa and duly came on in the 60th minute to block my Rafinha's 7 points against Chelsea. So that was a bit frustrating, not to mention Jota's couple of clear-cut opportunities that he missed towards the end of that match. So a little bit unfortunate, but I can't complain with 64 points.
A word on Aaron Ramsdale as well, because you've got him in goal. For you at the moment, is he the best goalkeeper in FPL, particularly at his price point?
Yeah, I think so. I think De Gea could rival him with Man United's decent fixtures, but I think even against Norwich, Man United were a little bit shaky. But I think Ramsdale is absolutely fantastic value. The combination that you need for a goalkeeper in FPL is a defence that's porous enough to concede plenty of shots for the goalkeeper to make saves, but solid enough to also keep the clean sheets. And I think it's 7 clean sheets in his last 13 games. So absolutely fantastic. Yeah, chuffed with Ramsdale.
Yeah, that's one of my biggest regrets on my wildcard earlier this season. His price now up to 5 million, but 11 points for him in game week 16. Now, game week 16 also marked the start of this season's FPL Cup, where over 8 million teams compete in a 23-round knockout tournament. So congratulations to Duncan, who got through. Interestingly, Duncan, I don't know if you know this, but you beat someone who hadn't made any transfers since spending 20 points on them in game week 3. So I'm not quite sure this will be the highlight of your FPL career.
Well, we've all got methods. That person obviously has a very game 3 week based approach to the game. But, you know, you've just got to take each opponent as they come. So delighted to get through.
Yeah, Conor Gallagher's heroics ensured Jonathan got through, whilst Ted is also through as well. Alas, I'm not. I was beaten 4 points by someone named Ahmed. So congratulations to Ahmed. I'm out of the FPL Cup. Congratulations to all of the other managers who made it through to round 2. Moving on now, because there are less than 48 hours between the end of game week 16 to the start of game week 17. So we're identifying some common conundrums FPL managers might have and seeing if our panel can offer their assistance. Okay, so first on the agenda in key conundrums ahead of game week 17, the Chelsea defence. We've already spoken about them in the opening section. No clean sheets in 4 matches. They've conceded 5 in the last 2 game weeks, just as we were all being tempted by the double up. Duncan, the stats aren't too pretty, are they? What's going wrong for Thomas Tuchel's side?
Yeah, they were slightly overperforming early in the season. You know, their goals conceded was obviously almost at historic lows, but the XG conceded wasn't great. You know, City and Liverpool probably defending slightly better than Chelsea, although Chelsea had the actual better goals conceded record. Obviously, we know Chelsea's squad is good, but I think the loss of players like Kante and particularly Chilwell, they're conceding a lot more goals since Chilwell got injured. And I think one of the reasons for that is that teams are able to kind of concentrate more on Reece James at the other side of the pitch. And we've seen that as well. Like, James's points returns have dropped off a cliff, really. So obviously, Rudiger's been a pretty solid choice for people most of the season. But and obviously did really well with the penalty assists at the weekend. But yeah, it's a difficult one. I mean, I've got Reece James. I can see him, you know, over Christmas having some really good games, but it is, again, you know, it could be time to move him out at the same time. So, yeah, a difficult one. And we'll have to see if Thomas Tuchel kind of changes their approach over the next few games, because they have become really open, both in the Premier League and the Champions League as well. So, I don't think we really saw this coming, but here we are.
Ted, you've doubled up on the Chelsea defence. What are your plans?
Yeah, I'm a little bit worried, I have to say. I don't think the performances of late warrant a Chelsea double up, even with the attacking prowess. Well, the potential that the wing-backs give us, Alonso and Reece James, have huge upsides if they can keep the clean sheets and deliver attacking returns at the same time. So quite happy with Alonso's assist at the weekend, but it does make me worry about doubling up in the future. So my plans will probably be to move one of Alonso and Reece James on to hedge my bets for the coming weeks.
If I had to push you, which one are you going to move on?
I think I've already decided. I think it will be Alonso that I move on. I think Reece James, even though he's only got 1 point in the last 4 games, is a bit of a red herring. I think he's playing in hugely attacking positions for a defender, and his upside is phenomenal. So technically, very gifted player, and I'm sure he'll be back among the FPL points soon.
Yeah, all of you have Reece James. Jonathan, what are your plans? Do you agree with Ted that at the moment managers should be keeping hold of him?
I agree with Ted, yeah, because he's even been experimented with in central midfield in recent fixtures. And I think that, you know, if you looked at some of the positions he took up at the weekend, he's almost like an attacking midfielder at certain points, like a 10 or a right winger. He's so, you know, so versatile. He can slot into different areas. I think he's kind of one of the main starters, if that makes sense. I can't see him really being dropped. So, and they've got Everton at home next game. So I'm going to keep him. I've had three Chelsea defensive assets for the whole season. I've had Rudiger, brought in James, obviously, and then Mendy as well. I've had since day one in goal. But I think Mendy's the one I'm looking at now, and I'm eyeing up, you know, can I get an extra million there to add to my transfer kitty? Because as Ted already mentioned, Ramsdale's having a really good season. Could I maybe switch to him? I'm also looking at Jose Sarr as well for Wolves, who's, I think he's the second top scoring keeper in the game. So I know that Wolves and Chelsea are playing each other. So in that, I'm kind of looking at that in a couple of weeks and thinking, is that maybe one where, you know, maybe Wolves nick a 1-0 or something like that. Molineux, you know, around Christmas period, there's always a couple of strange results for, you know, home teams, that kind of thing. So that's the one I'm looking at. I think three Chelsea defensive assets is too many now. I've risked it. I've stuck with it for like 3, 4, 5 weeks, game weeks. And now I'm concluding that it's just too many to have. So, yeah, I'm going to switch one of them at least, I think, this coming round.
Rudiger's someone else that you have, Jonathan. Because he doesn't seem to get rotated by Tuchel and the fact that he got those points this weekend, would you recommend managers keep hold of him as well?
I'm definitely sticking with him. I'm a massive fan of Rudiger Kelly. I think he's like the pantomime villain that the Premier League needs. He's kind of like... I couldn't believe it looking at the other days. I think he's only got two yellow cards the entire season. Am I right in saying that? I'm not sure. But I find that incredible, really. He seems to be a yellow card waiting or a red card waiting to happen every week almost. In the game against Chelsea, obviously, he was first in for the scraps and the brawls and that kind of thing. And you do worry a little bit in terms of, is there a red card coming at some point down the line? Because he is just so aggressive in the way he gets in people's faces. And, you know, he really likes to stamp his authority on things, and he tries to intimidate players and that kind of thing. So he does walk that tightrope, but I think he offers a lot, you know, from set pieces as well, attacking wise. You know, he's got some goals in that area from headers and that kind of thing from corners. I think he's always going to be in the team. Obviously, if you know, with Christiansen, for example, the contract situation, Thomas Tuchel dropped him talking about his contract and that kind of thing, but he's kept Rudiger in the side, who's also on an expiring contract. So that kind of shows you that he's a really important figure in the team. So definitely sticking with Rudiger for me. When I brought him in the team, I think his value's gone up quite a lot as well since then. So he's one of those ones, I think Duncan mentioned it as well. There's certain players that you get to a point where their value's gone up by so much that taking them out is almost detrimental to your own team. So yeah, I'm sticking with Rudiger for the foreseeable future. And their fixtures coming up as well, I think, they still might concede the odd goals here or there, but I think with Rudiger, you know, things like winning penalties or getting assists, getting goals, he adds that as well. So I'm happy with Rudiger, yeah.
Okay, so we've said to hold Reece James and also to hold Antonio Rudiger if managers have them, but we've said not to do the double up. If a manager, Duncan, has a double up of Rudiger and James, who's the one that you would say hold?
Rudiger's game this weekend was notable because it's quite a rare thing to happen, isn't it? So I think we've seen what James can do this season. So I would say Reece James is still the better option. But at the same time, you know, Rudiger is pretty much unrotatable. I think, you know, James, he may get moved out of the team. I mean, we saw him rested or semi-injured for the Watford game. And that's one of Chelsea's worst performances of the season. So, yeah, for me, I've only got James, but I would definitely favour him, I think.
Okay, so Reece James, the most favourable pick amongst our panellists. And a reminder of those fixtures that we keep talking about, Everton, Wolves, Villa and Brighton in their next four. Do be mindful, it's then Liverpool, Man City, Spurs and two blank game weeks while they compete at the Club World Cup. So I get the feeling in a few weeks we might be revisiting this discussion. Moving on now to our next conundrum on our agenda, João Cancelo picked up his fifth yellow card of the campaign against Wolves. 84% of the top 100,000 managers own him. That means he will miss his first league game of the season this week at home to Leeds. Already over 150,000 managers have sold him. Ted, does that surprise you?
It does. I think Cancelo's a fantastic player, hugely reliable this season. One of the only players in that City team to play every single game so far this campaign. So we've been benefiting from his clean sheet points and his attacking potential. 5 assists so far this season. So with one game suspended, I think it might be prudent to keep hold of him.
Yeah, I totally agree with Ted. I mean, as Ted mentioned, he has played every game this season. It might be the sort of week that even if he wasn't suspended, that he might have got rotated just to give him a bit of a rest. We don't know. So you can't obviously predict that. You do know when suspensions are, but it's one game. And he's so kind of integral to the way City play that, you know, we know that he's going to be back as soon as he's available. So, yeah, I would not be selling him.
Jonathan, do you echo that view? And also the view that Duncan's brought up there, that actually maybe we know that Pep likes to rest and rotate his players every so often, that actually maybe longer term, this could play into Cancelo owners' hands.
You know, he's going to miss a game at some point. You know, he's not going to play every single game. So I think it's the fact it's been taken out of Pep's hands. Actually, that makes me feel quite comfortable and positive because you know that he'd probably come back for the game after that and you know, the Christmas period. So I'm actually in a weird way quite happy about it because there's always going to be one game where he doesn't play, and you know, especially in this period of the season where there's so many games. And so, yeah, like I say, it's been taken out of Pep's hands.
We're also in a strange situation where City aren't in the League Cup quarterfinals, which are next week. So normally, you know, he'll come back for the weekend fixtures and then have a whole week before Christmas where City don't have a game. So, yeah, you imagine he'll play in both of those games. So, yeah, I agree. It's kind of give him a little rest at the perfect time.
We're tempting fate here, aren't we? He's going to decide that actually he needs 2 games off and we're all going to be wishing that we had sold him. And those 150,000 managers were apparently right. Ted, just on a wider point, we've talked about the Chelsea defence there as well and the uncertainty around them. With Cancelo benched this weekend, we've seen a lot of teams set up with 4 or 5 in defence. We could see potentially quite a different setup from some teams this week, couldn't we? Do you think we'll be going back to a lot more of a 3-man defence?
I definitely can see the template shifting towards 3 at the back with an overloading in midfield. So I think it makes sense to downgrade a double Chelsea defence, as we've discussed earlier. But with the Cancelo suspension, it does create a dilemma for us as FPL managers in order to balance the rest of our team with the likes of Ronaldo being a popular transfer in this week and maybe next week after his penalty. The squad depth might decrease in a lot of our teams, and that means keeping hold of Cancelo and benching him this week might be quite a difficult thing to do. So it's just a reiteration of the fact that it pays dividends having squad depth at this time of the season, I think.
Yeah, it does pay dividends to have a strong bench at the moment, doesn't it? I should also add at this point that other highly owned FPL assets that are on 4 yellow cards going into this game week, Reece James, who we've already spoken about, Conor Gallagher, Andrew Robertson, Rafinha, Bruno Fernandes and Callum Wilson. And Jonathan, you have 3 of those players in Wilson, James and Gallagher. Are you a bit nervous and you having to bear that in mind when you're making any transfers?
Yeah, I am having to bear that in mind, Killian. I think it's kind of like what Ted says, is the importance of a squad at the moment. So fortunately, I've got 2 transfers available this game week, and I've also still got some good money in the bank. So I'm kind of like carefully looking at my options there because, you know, at this stage of the season, yeah, things like suspensions come in. You've got to figure it out. I mean, this week just gone, I was well set up with my bench, with the likes of Gallagher. Antonio was on my bench. So, you know, usefully he got a few points at least, even if it wasn't too many. But I need to sort my bench out as well. So with those 2 transfers, like, I'm eyeing up people like Antonio and that to maybe replace. I wouldn't say I'm too worried because, like I say, rotation happens. So if Wilson comes out, then if someone like Antonio comes in, I'm pretty comfortable with that. But I'm aware that there's going to be some people getting suspended, that kind of thing. I think as long as you're aware of it and you can prepare, what's your plan B? That's probably the key here in this festive period.
Anyway, moving on to our final of our 3 conundrums. Emile Smith Rowe, after missing last Monday's defeat at Everton due to a groin injury, Arsenal's number 10 and the 4th most owned midfielder in FPL, was an unused substitute for Arsenal's 3-0 win over Southampton. We've heard that Jonathan actually benefited from the fact they didn't need him to come off the bench. But Duncan, you already sold him ahead of this game week. What was the thinking there? And are you quite pleased you made that move?
Yeah, I mean, obviously he didn't play against Everton, which I think had a detrimental effect on Arsenal. But he had sort of been tailing off a little bit on the underlying numbers. And this sort of season he's had, you know, he's got his England debut, he's been elevated. It's not the sort of thing you can possibly sustain for a whole season. I think we're seeing it with other players like Conor Gallagher, where you can't sort of come in and out of form. And it's about kind of spotting that, when that's going to happen and when it's going to stop. And yeah, often I'm not very good at that. But I think I probably timed it quite well with Smith Rowe.
Yeah, he went on that brilliant run, didn't he, between game weeks 9 and 14, scoring 4 goals. But his expected goals has been quite low, 0.88 and 10 goal attempts. He was beaten by a large list of players. Does this now tempt you into selling him, Jonathan?
I'm not going to sell him because I think he's a useful squad option. So when you look at Conor Gallagher and him, they're the two that kind of, they're not too expensive and they can supplement. They can go on the bench if they need to. You know, that was my rationale with high end. This game we just gone, obviously, if Smith-Rowe doesn't play, Gallagher will come in. And, you know, maybe it'll be vice versa another week. Maybe I'll sort of play Gallagher. And then if he doesn't, for any reason, misses a game, Smith-Rowe can come in. So I'm quite comfortable with that. You need some low cost, relatively low cost midfielders. And I'm happy to keep Smith-Rowe, to be honest. So I think he's also, you've got to bear in mind which players are kind of not guaranteed starters, but very likely to start. And Arteta is a big fan of Smith-Rowe and Saka. So I imagine they're going to play most games. So I don't think he's one that's going to maybe be rotated. Whereas if you look at maybe other midfielders in Arsenal's team, you're not entirely sure always if they're going to play. You've got Xhaka just come back. You've got like Sambi, Lokonga, players like that. So with Smith-Rowe, you know he's one of the kind of darlings of Arsenal. So he's likely to get minutes. And so for that reason, I'm happy to keep him.
But equally, during the festive period when there are so many games, if a player's managing an injury, does that worry you that they won't be a regular?
Not really, because I think he'll still get... I mean, it's difficult to know the extent of the injury because he was obviously on the bench at the weekend just gone, and it's hard to really get clear information on how bad it is. But what I know is that if he is available, Arteta's going to want him in the team, or at least want him around the team in terms of 45 minutes, maybe 30 minutes. So for me, I'm comfortable with that and I'm happy to keep him. Yeah, I don't really worry too much about that. For me, what worries me more is if the manager is, you know, going to chop and change the player if he's not injured. And that's a bigger concern. You know, when you look at some of the Manchester City players, for example, you've got players in great form, but you just don't know at any point they might get rotated. So with Smith-Rowe, I just don't get that feeling. I feel like he's one of the main players at Arsenal this season. And so I'm happy to have him at that price point.
And Ted, finally, if you did have him, sell or hold, what would you recommend managers do?
Goodness me, it's a difficult one because I think, as Jonathan alluded to, around that 6 million price point, I think it's only really Gallagher and Smith-Rowe that excel. And I mean, from my perspective, talking about Smith-Rowe specifically, I think he might be a better footballer than he is FPL option. I think he's incredibly technically capable, but most of his shot positions are edge of the box. And it seems to me that the reliability of his returns isn't necessarily there compared to many other options. I think Conor Gallagher is an excellent option, but he's been playing centre defensive midfield recently. And it seems like recency bias to suggest that Conor Gallagher is a great option because of his 2 goals on Sunday. But I think he's a character that makes late runs into the box. And I think that's invaluable when in a very attacking Crystal Palace side. So it's a very difficult toss-up between the two. But if it was me, I probably would side on Gallagher.
Okay, well, hopefully we've answered some of the common queries you'll have going into game week 17. Now let's look ahead to the fixtures that await us. We have some staggered kickoff times in game week 17. 7:30 on Tuesday is when Brentford versus Manchester United gets underway. 15 minutes later, Dean Smith welcomes his former side Aston Villa to Carrow Road. Then at 8 p.m, it's Marcelo Bielsa versus Pep Guardiola as Manchester City welcome Leeds. There are then 3 games at 7:30 Wednesday. Brighton Wolves, a battle at the bottom. Burnley versus Watford and Crystal Palace host Southampton. At 8, it's an all-London affair, Arsenal against West Ham. And day 3 of game week 17 starts at 7:30 with Leicester versus Spurs, Chelsea versus Everton. And then it is a biggie with plenty of FPL interest as Newcastle travel to Anfield. Let's do this in fixture order then. Duncan, you can kick us off with Norwich versus Aston Villa, which may not sound too glamorous, but obviously the headline writers are going to enjoy this one.
It's the Dean Smith Classico. I think everyone's looking forward to it, aren't they? It's a bit of a weird fixture list he's had. He's obviously played Southampton already, who were the last team he faced as Villa manager. He played United at the weekend. That was the last team he won against as Villa manager. And now he's playing against Aston Villa themselves. So quite a good start for him. Norwich have never won on a Tuesday in Premier League history, which isn't ideal for them. But they did look pretty good against United, I thought, at the weekend. Probably should have got a draw, really, if it wasn't for David De Gea, who we discussed earlier. But Villa are looking really, really good, I think, under Gerrard. You know, they've won every game apart from the matches where they played City and Liverpool, which is the case for most teams. They restricted City to their lowest second half XG in any game this season. They frustrated Liverpool for a long time. And although they've only kept one clean sheet in their last 14 away Premier League games, I can really see Villa keeping quite a lot of clean sheets going forward. He's really organised that defence really well. The midfield's kind of functioning. Obviously, we know that he plays... the fullback's quite attacking. So, you know, Matty Cash, Matt Target are good options. But at the same time, I can see them, you know, keeping it pretty tight, but particularly away at Norwich. I think this is a sort of fixture that Gerrard will really relish. So, yeah, I mean, I think other options as well. Danny Ings has scored every time he's played Norwich in the Premier League, three games. And then Ollie Watkins is looking really good. And I think he's the sort of player that really fits into this Gerrard kind of system. He's got three goals in his last seven. And I'm actually, he is probably my transfer this week if I do one, would be Watkins, I think. But yeah, I'm looking forward to this game. I think it will be, you know, well contested. The teams that came second and third in 92-93, a long time ago, but, you know, better times.
You mentioned there the optimism around Steven Gerrard and Aston Villa. And obviously, every time Norwich play anyone, their defensive stats are reeled out. But their defence has improved since Dean Smith's arrival. They're in the top half of various underlying stats from game weeks 12 to 16. Does that mean managers should err on the side of caution? Or do you still think the likes of Ollie Watkins, who's got three goals from seven, is still a good option?
I think it's true that Norwich have improved. And I think Dean Smith is a good manager. And I think he'll give them a chance for staying up. It'll be close, but I think he might be able to do it. But I think Villa, if you look at their squad, they are below where they should be. And they brought in a manager who seems like, you know, often when ex-players, big names become managers, it doesn't always work. But Gerrard has really kind of slotted into this position. He feels like a kind of football manager now. You almost forget Gerrard the player. And it's been, you know, on the underlying numbers, one of the best kind of introductions for a new manager I've seen for quite a while in the Premier League. So, I'm thinking of kind of going relatively big on Villa, particularly with their, you know, got really good fixtures coming up. So, I think Norwich away won't scare them at all.
Yeah, 7.5 million for Ollie Watkins, who's on a lot of people's radars now, I think. And they've got a nice run of fixtures coming up, haven't they, Ted, Aston Villa? Norwich, Burnley, Leeds, Brentford all amongst the next five, with Leeds, Newcastle and Watford soon after. Are their players on your radar for the long term as well as the short term, Ted?
I mean, you might be convincing me with that delicious run of fixtures, but I haven't really thought about bringing in an Aston Villa player other than obviously Duncan mentioned Ollie Watkins there. I don't think there's any obvious player that really replaces the current midfield necessarily that of Salah, Jota, a couple of City mids and maybe Jared Bowen. So it's a very interesting time. I think people could reap the benefits, though, of going with a team that maybe is undervalued at the moment. I think, as Duncan said earlier, Aston Villa have done really well under Gerrard, and I think they frustrated Liverpool to a really high degree. And I think they were quite unlucky, in all honesty, not to get a result. And as a Liverpool fan, that pains me to say. But I think from an Aston Villa point of view, I think that gives them huge confidence, and maybe that delivers some FPL potential in them. So, but in order to answer your question, I'm not really considering any players from Aston Villa, but maybe that's my own negligence rather than anything else.
Okay, so Ted, not yet considering any Aston Villa players, but there is still plenty of time. If Duncan's prediction comes true at Carrow Road, then potentially you could be. Let's move on to Jonathan's fixture now. He's been looking at Manchester City versus Leeds, which kicks off on Tuesday at 8 p.m.
Yeah, and this is an interesting one in the sense of I'm just wondering if this might be the time to maybe stick or twist with some Manchester City players. You know, the likes of Raheem Sterling, who's obviously in good form. If you look at the sort of the form rankings on FPL, Sterling's up there in midfield. You've got Gabriel Jesus, he's not up there at the moment, but you know he's a player who's scored quite well this season. It was fairly disappointing in the game against Wolves, but it's someone that you might consider. Leeds have been leaking goals for fun in terms of expected goals against. They're one of the worst in the league. In a way, hard to predict, but in a way, not hard to predict. If that makes sense. You probably. I think it will go one of two ways, basically. It'll either be comfortable sort of City routine win, but Leeds are that kind of high running, high energy team where no matter what happens, they'll be going all out for it. And I just wonder if Manchester City's defence, is this the week? You know, we talked about Cancelo just now. Even if he had been available, would this be the week to maybe change or make some sort of changes in the defensive areas? Because Leeds are that kind of team where they're not hard to predict in their approach, but they're hard to predict in terms of results. So obviously the Chelsea-Leeds game, 3-2, a bit chaotic. They've had a lot of injuries, Leeds, Bielsa's got that relentless commitment to his style. And so I suppose what I'm trying to say here in a long-winded way is I think there's an opportunity here to maybe profit on some random things happening. And that's kind of what I'm looking at. I'm wondering if someone like Sterling might be the right time to bring him in. Is it the right time to maybe take out Manchester City defenders because Leeds are kind of that just high energy? And also the likes of someone like Gabriel Jesus, is this the time where maybe, you know, I can imagine him sort of getting a hat-trick or something like that. So I know this is a weird way of trying to explain it, but I just feel like there's something in the air in this game where you could take some advantages if that makes sense.
Last year, if you remember, Leeds won 2-1, but they only had two shots in the whole match and scored them both. And I know what you mean, Jonathan. It is putting these two teams together with their managers and their philosophies it's like a mad science experiment. You don't know what's going to emerge. So, yeah, it's quite hard to call, actually. Maybe Stuart Dallas is going to be brilliant again. Bring him in, but, you know, maybe not.
Yeah, we had the debate on the podcast a couple of weeks ago about who the best Manchester City midfielder was, and Bernardo Silva came out on top, and the points in his performances since have proven that. Is he, for you, Ted, still the standout option and someone that we need, particularly with Manchester City's kind run of fixtures, not just this game against Leeds?
I mean, Man City are a complete enigma for me in FPL terms, because there's such a wealth of attacking options and each player delivers something unique to that side. It's like you need them all to benefit fully from all of the FPL points that they deliver. And it's very difficult to pick between one or even two of them. So Bernardo Silva seems to be doing the business at the moment. And the other options are Foden and Gundogan. But we've heard recently that Gundogan's been struggling with an injury, so I might be deterred from going for him. But Bernardo Silva seems to be the one. We've got definitely a difference in the type of players. So Bernardo Silva, for me, is incredibly technically capable and regularly overperforms his expected goals figure. Well, that just shows that he's capable of consistently doing that. And we shouldn't handicap him in terms of dismissing his potential because of that overperformance. Just because he is overperforming, I think he's very technically capable and a very good FPL asset. So he is very tempting to bring in from my perspective. And I can tell you, it was pretty torturous watching that City game on Saturday lunchtime without any City midfielders. So I feel I have to rectify that. And I think probably it's either Foden or Bernardo Silva, who is slightly cheaper, that might solve that issue for me.
Moving on, Ted, take it away with your fixture that you've been looking at in detail.
So my fixture is Arsenal versus West Ham, and I think this is a big one for both teams. I think West Ham probably go in as favourites, having beaten Liverpool and Chelsea in recent weeks in 5-goal thrillers. But West Ham have been playing incredibly solidly. Although held to a frustrating draw against Burnley today, I thought they were the much better side, and I think they'll give Arsenal a tough time. Obviously, we have FPL interest in Mikel Antonio and Jared Bowen, who were 420,000 managers transferred in game week 16. I think there's high hope for both of them. I think Arsenal are one of the worst teams for defensive errors and for defensive errors leading to goal. The only issue is that they have a goalkeeper in form in Aaron Ramsdale, who we mentioned earlier. So it'll be an interesting battle, attack versus defence. But I can see West Ham taking the points here. I think they are just the next level this season. I think David Moyes has done a fantastic job. And they play cohesively. Declan Rice is a wonder in midfield. So it'll be interesting for the likes of Smith Rowe and Saka owners whether they choose to actually play them in this match, because I don't personally see them getting anything, but I could be surprised.
Who's the better option out of Smith Rowe and Saka at the moment? Especially, a lot of people at the beginning of the season went for Smith Rowe because he was that bit cheaper. There's now only 0.2 between them.
Yeah, 100%. I think Smith Rowe was the better option, 0.5 or 0.6 cheaper than Saka. But I think Saka's probably a little bit more dynamic at the moment. He's getting the games, more importantly, due to Smith Rowe's injury. He got an assist at the weekend, which is obviously welcomed for his owners. But I think, as I said, Saka's probably the option. But if I was going to play devil's advocate, I probably wouldn't bring in either player at this current time. I think there are better midfield options elsewhere.
Well, the Burnley-West Ham game at the weekend was quite frustrating because a lot of people have a West Ham attacker in their side, Ted, be it Mikel Antonio, where they've held him as Duncan said earlier, or Jared Bowen was a popular transfer in this week as well. If managers don't have either, who is the best option? Do you need one of them with West Ham's upcoming fixtures? And for this one as well, would you start a West Ham attacker?
Oh, for sure. Definitely start them. I think Arsenal is an accessible fixture for these West Ham players. I think they're both very different prospects. I think Antonio is really, really lacking form at the moment with only one goal in his last 10. But he's retained this 40% ownership, which is remarkable. And I can only justify that or reason that there are very minimal other forward options at this very moment, with the likes of Bamford and Calvert-Lewin being injured for the last, 9 or 10 game weeks. So I think he's a staple in quite a lot of FPL sides. The good news for managers that have kept him is I think that he is a bit of a flat track bully. We have seen in previous weeks where the fixture difficulty has been quite high that we've seen Antonio move out onto the channels to run the channels and let the likes of Lanzini, Fornals, and Bowen take up the central positions. I think that will probably change against easier opposition. We saw that against Burnley today. Antonio was more occupying the penalty spot position more often, which is great for FPL returns when the service does come to him. So I think Antonio is a really good option for the easier fixtures, but I think Jared Bowen's form is just unparalleled at the moment. I think he's got 10 goal involvements in the last 12 matches. He is full of confidence, and I think regardless, he will find a way to score us FPL points. With Aaron Cresswell's injury at the moment, he's taking lots of set pieces. I think there's lots of strings to his bow, for sure.
Well, they are three of the 10 fixtures covered in detail. Your deadline is again Tuesday at 6. On to the final section. Okay, so we are at decision time. Just what do our panel plan on doing ahead of the 6 p.m. deadline on Tuesday? Jonathan, it sounds like you're going to go for Gabriel Jesus. Is that correct?
Undecided, but I've got two transfers this week. I've been looking at Antonio for months, it feels like, waiting for something to happen. Also got Ivan Toney, and you know he's had his problems in the recent game weeks. I'm definitely going to, I think, it's time for me to say goodbye to Edouard Mendy. I think, unfortunately, I love him. I've had him all season, but I think it might be time now for either Ramsdale or Jose Sarr. And then I'm going to use my second substitute to either bring in Gabriel Jesus or Emmanuel Dennis. I'm going to weigh that up. I mean, Dennis is in such great form. He's a top scoring striker now in the game. So my worry is obviously just that a lot of people are going to start getting Dennis, and you want to have some differentials there in those situations. So I'll probably keep Antonio. So it might be Toney. Toney might be the one to be sacrificed, unfortunately. And the streak will end, and he'll go in and score a hat trick. Pull out his crazy goal celebrations, and you know, I just feel that's coming, and I don't want to miss the train. Having
if
waited
you sold him, that'll hurt as well.
Just yeah, exactly. That, so, yeah. So I think, yeah, basically to summarize, I'm going to take out Mendy, and I'm going to bring in a new keeper, and I'm also going to take out probably Toney, and I'll replace him with, as I say, either Dennis or Jesus. I think both of them have value in the coming game weeks. I think the rotation with Pep just means that Jesus will get minutes here and there, and as a focal striker. So those are my two substitutes this week.
Be careful with Dennis, because he might be off to the African Cup of Nations in a few game weeks' time. But the problem is, he's in red-hot form. And we saw Josh King play practically left-back against Brentford. So it was not encouraging for those that brought him in. But yeah, difficult dilemma for you, Jonathan, I think.
Duncan, what about you? What are your plans transfer-wise?
Kind of want to have two at the end of the week, so probably not going to make a change. I really want a new goalkeeper. I really want Aaron Ramsdale deep down in my heart. But then it's quite similar to Jonathan, actually, with, you know, I've got Toney, I've got Antonio. I've sort of been convinced by this chat to give Antonio another week at least. He has got 11 goal involvements in his last 11 London derbies as well. So he does sort of step it up in London derbies. But yeah, I mean, Watkins, I think, as I said earlier, bring in and Dennis as well. I know some people don't agree, but I've pretty much given up on premium strikers now for the season. I think just
not even Ronaldo.
Yeah, I think I just put it all in midfield. I think it's just going to work out better in the long run. So I think, but there is a lot of chopping and changing amongst the kind of, you know, the next tier down of strikers, because they are kind of in and out of form, in and out of injury. And it is about, it's that alchemy, isn't it? Just picking the right time to make those changes. So, and, you know, we're about to go into one of the busiest periods of not just this season, but any season in Premier League history. So it is, you know, it's just like in real life, I think the next few weeks are going to change the league table in quite a significant way.
Duncan, at the end of the podcast, with a huge revelation there, which I feel could kickstart a whole other podcast, by saying he's keeping away from premium strikers when it feels like everyone is bringing in Cristiano Ronaldo at the moment. Ted, is your plan just to bring in that City midfielder that you've been craving?
Yeah, I think so. As I said, it was pretty torturous watching City without one. I think I need some cover there. But the only way I can do it, the only way I can upgrade Rafinha to a City mid is to make another transfer. So it might be a hit for me this week to kill two birds with one stone by removing Alonso and moving him down to the likes of Diogo Dalot, Man United, which doesn't fill me with too much confidence considering Man United's performance at Norwich. I think they are still defensively porous, and we will have to see whether Dalot and indeed Alex Telles keep their places on the wings. So we will see. But I think those probably will be my transfers this week. And I'm still happy to own the likes of Ronaldo, who's got a tasty run of fixtures. So we'll see what happens.
And finally, armband chat. And I suspect this week might be even more one-sided than usual. Last week, Mo Salah was captained by four times as many managers as the next most popular captain, Cristiano Ronaldo. And with Newcastle at home this midweek, is he the obvious option again, Jonathan?
Definitely. I think even in games like the Villa game where not much is happening, he's still kind of producing penalties and producing actions to create penalties as well. So he's definitely, I mean, Newcastle, if they concede four against Leicester, it could be eight against Liverpool, to be honest, the way they played. So fill your boots with Salah. It might even be a triple captain this week, possibly.
Come on, Ted, aren't you slightly tempted to bring in Bernardo and then captain him?
No way. always captain Mo, in my opinion. You just cannot beat the reliability and the consistency that he's delivered this season. He's only blanked in game week two, and for a captain in FPL, that's all you want, that expectation that he will score. I mean, it's not just the player himself, it's the fact that Liverpool play with such a free attacking style, and when you watch them, you just expect them to score. So it's not worth overthinking, in my opinion. Just captain Mo.
I was really calm because, yeah, Ted's totally right. You don't have to worry, just it's the Mo Salah captain. But then Jonathan mentioned triple captain and they're playing Newcastle at home, and now I'm like, oh no.
Oh no. This has got a Duncan move written all over it, hasn't it?
Is that the time? Yeah, I'm going to triple captain Ryan Fraser. No, I'm not. Mo Salah. Yeah, I mean, that is, that I find triple captain the hardest chip to play because, you know, there's so many opportunities where it's that bit when you see every week that you see someone as like triple captain's Dennis against Brentford or whatever. And, you know, you wonder why or how their thought process got to that point. But yeah, Salah at home to Newcastle does look full of potential.
I think with a single game week fixture, I would be inclined to agree. But just stay strong, guys. There's plenty of double game weeks this year. Stay strong.
Stay strong, Duncan. Stay strong. That's where we'll leave it anyway.
All right. Yeah, thanks, Ted. You've helped me with that. That's good. Mind games from Jonathan.
I think that's where we'll leave it, just before Duncan is tempted into any other crazy decisions. Ted, thank you so much for coming on. A brilliant pod debut. And as always, a big thank you to Jonathan and to Duncan. Hopefully, we've given you some hints and tips ahead of your deadline. Set those alarms for Tuesday at 6 p.m, 90 minutes ahead of kickoff. And do not forget, you can still join our league. The code is 1KIKS7, and keep an eye on the Premier League app and website for plenty more hints and tips. We'll be back again on Thursday. Good luck, and don't miss the deadline.